This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Today is our debut show on Free Speech TV. It was just about a year since my previous show, Uprising, was on the airwaves, and I'm thrilled to be back. Please tell your friends to tune in every weekday on FSTV at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is available on DirecTV, Dish Network, and Roku. The National Labor Relations Board recently handed a major victory for graduate student workers, voting 3-1 to allow them to join unions. Student workers at public universities had already had that right, but for years, private school graduate students working as research or teaching assistants were kept from unionizing. Private schools justified their opposition to unionizing by citing academic freedom, claiming that the paid work that graduate students did was meant to benefit their education more than their personal finances. Still, universities rely heavily on the labor of grad students. My guest is Josh Idelson. He covers politics, policy, and labor for Bloomberg Businessweek, and his work has appeared at many outlets, including The Washington Post, Reuters, and Slate. He's been closely following this story for a number of years. Welcome to the program, Josh.
Thanks for having me back.
So first, let's talk about the difference between public and private universities. How is it that public schools have had, enabled grad students to organize, but not private?
So state government employees are covered by state labor law. And so in many states, particularly some big blue states like New York and California, that means they're governed by generally a more pro-labor set of laws than private sector workers. Private sector employees throughout the country generally are covered by one federal law, the National Labor Relations Act, when it comes to their right to form a union or get involved in collective action. And so the question of whether private employees can win union recognition through the labor board process rests with the federal agency that interprets and enforces labor law, whereas the question of whether a state university's workers, someplace like the University of California, can unionize and do it through the government and get required recognition, that's up to state by state. So if you're a state employee, you either have a more progressive or a less progressive state labor law regime rather than the federal one that governs the private sector. And so for decades, we've seen some public universities like Wisconsin, like New York, like California, have public sector graduate unions, while in the private sector, we've had this back and forth at the NLRB.
So some of the universities that have been most opposed to the unionizing have been really big, very well-known universities. We're talking about Brown University, Columbia. Tell us about, throw out some names of universities that have opposed grad student unionizing and on what basis they've done so, right? Universities are often seen as liberal bastions, rightfully or wrongfully, but why have they opposed it?
So in the case that the NLRB just ruled on at Columbia, actually, as I reported for Business Week, there is an amicus brief filed by the entire rest of the Ivy League, those schools coming together, along with other top universities, to say in one voice that they were against this. And as you said, their argument was that graduate students primarily are students, that the teaching they do is something that benefits them, the teachers doing it, who are grad students more than the university, and that it would interfere with academic freedom by interfering with the managerial discretion of the universities to decide who should be teaching what and in what way and with what course load, and that you couldn't have real academic freedom and also have collective bargaining rights for people who were graduate students at the same time that they were doing the teaching and the research.
And so the work that graduate students do, just to sort of get into that for a minute, I mean, when I was in graduate school, I worked both as a research assistant and as a teaching assistant. And of course, I felt like it was part of my education, but it was hard work. And often it involved things like classroom prep, grading homework, grading tests. And often I felt that I was highly underpaid for it. How do we see the labor of graduate students? Is it really the same as the labor that other groups that have long had the right to unionize do?
Well, everybody's job is a little different, but the point that many of the graduate students who've been working to form these unions would make is that when you're, for example, grading a whole bunch of exams by undergraduates or doing the discussion sections or with other teaching assistants who are grad students handling all the discussion sections for a lecture that is not even in the area that you're studying to get your PhD in. And when you see a major chunk of the teaching and research work of the university being done by fellow graduate students, a lot of these activists would argue, it's difficult to imagine that it's not work in some sense, particularly when you are being compensated for it, you're being taxed for the compensation that you're getting for it, you're being instructed in how to do it, and were you to stop doing it, the university wouldn't be able to continue functioning in the way that it's designed to without hiring a bunch of other paid people to do it instead.
Right, and I think that's a really important point. The universities rely heavily on the work of graduate students. Now, there was an attempt to liken graduate students to interns, corporate interns, right? Why did that fail?
So the argument about interns indeed was made in one of the briefs, and this reflects how this is not only a contestation that's going on about graduate students. We've seen fights in recent years about the labor rights of college athletes, of interns, of domestic workers, of farm workers. There are all kinds of workers who in one way or another are excluded or have been excluded from some of these creaky New Deal labor laws that we have. And one of the things that continues to be fought over is who is a worker and what do we recognize as work that perhaps at some point didn't. But the standard under the National Labor Relations Act is not exactly the same as the Fair Labor Standards Act. And the conclusion that the Labor Board reached in this case was that you don't have to decide whether someone is primarily a student or primarily a worker. That just as in some other cases about academic workers, the fact that someone has a status as a student doesn't detract from their qualifying under the New Deal labor law to be an employee as long as they are being compensated and directed by the university, just as having a second job somewhere else wouldn't
right.
stop
you. Can,
you, from-
you can be a student and a worker at the same time and still have your labor rights respected. Now, it wasn't just the private universities, the Ivy Leaguers, that were opposing this. For years, members of President Obama's own administration were opposing this. How is that? Tell us about some of the figures that were fighting, sort of liberal figures that you would think would be pro-labor, behind whom organized labor throws its weight that ended up opposing union rights for graduate students at private schools.
So one of the key struggles in the couple decade fight over the rights of graduate students to organize and to win union contracts was at New York University. New York University in 2000, right before President Clinton left office, was the place where the NLRB had ruled and created a ruling that stayed in up until 2004, stating that private university grad students were in fact employees who could unionize. In that 4-year period, until Bush appointees on the labor board overturned that precedent, New York University was the only place where private sector graduate students actually were successful at winning union recognition in a union contract. And then when the Bush appointed majority on the labor board overturned that precedent, New York University was left in a position where it could have nonetheless continued recognizing and negotiating a second contract in 2005 with that union, an affiliate of the United Auto Workers, or it could refuse to do so. And when NYU refused to negotiate a new contract and the UAW went out on an extended unsuccessful strike during which they made allegations of various kinds of alleged union busting, including punishing, surveilling, terminating people who were involved in the cause, a couple of the key figures at NYU were Jack Lew and Cheryl Mills, both of whom at the time were former Clinton officials who graduate student activists targeted as people who, having worked in the Clinton administration as prominent Democrats, that they believe should be held to a standard of not supporting anti-union activity by NYU. In the time since then, both Cheryl Mills and Jack Lew have come back into the public sector. Cheryl Mills, you hear about more often because of her work at the State Department with Hillary Clinton. Jack Lew, you hear about more often as the Treasury Secretary and before that, Chief of Staff in the White House.
So now you have the NLRB with this 3-1 vote, and these are, of course, Obama appointees, overturning earlier decisions, Brown University decision, and opening the door essentially for private school grad students to unionize. Let's get into this decision. First of all, how important is it that the NLRB did this? Are you surprised that it was Obama appointees?
It's not surprising. There have been signals for several years that the NLRB was considering reopening the issue, and there is a long and sordid set of political and procedural delays that led to this decision not happening until now, including NYU, where there could have been a sequel to the NYU decision, making the decision instead a couple years ago to make a deal with the UAW that allowed recognition without the issue coming to the NLRB, which is why we ended up with this Columbia decision. This is a very big deal. It affects potentially tens of thousands or more people who now have the opportunity to go through the NLRB process. Viewers should keep in mind that this is the same process that on paper is available to workers at FedEx or at Walmart or at any other private employer. And so having that process available on paper is not something that guarantees you'll actually get union recognition or a union contract, but it means that you have, again, at least on paper, the opportunity for some protection if you organize against retaliation, and the opportunity going through the hurdles of the NLRB process to win a legal requirement if you show you have majority support that your company negotiate with you, even if it would rather not.
Do you have a sense that groups of grad students have already begun taking the NLRB on this opportunity?
There are campaigns at a bunch of campuses now. Unions involved include the UAW, SEIU, the American Federation of Teachers, Unite Here. There are particularly at some name brand, particularly high profile universities, like Yale, like Harvard, like the New School, like American. This is an area for unions, which, as your viewers probably realize, have seen their numbers decline. This creates some new organizing opportunities. Though the 2000 to 2004 experience, when a precedent like this was in place and only one group of grad students actually got a union contract, is a reminder that it's not any kind of guarantee.
And Josh, what would the unionizing of grad students at private schools do for the bottom line, for their economics? I mean, being a university student in general is a tough prospect. And as a graduate student, if you're working as an RA or a TA, a research or teaching assistant, you're certainly getting paid for, you know, work that does overlap with your education, but usually the pay barely covers your living costs, depending upon which field you're in, which university you're working in. But this is largely, of course, a young demographic of workers. What could this mean for the economy as a whole if, within the next year, grad students across the country were to unionize and, through that unionizing effort, win some better wages and some benefits?
Well, certainly it could mean that universities end up having to pay some of these grad students who are doing the work for them more money for that work. And we've seen over the past several years an increasing trend towards what people would call the casualization of some of this labor, that less of the academic work gets done by tenured or tenured track faculty and more by adjuncts, another group that unions have been trying to organize with some success, and graduate student employees. So whether that trend is curbed in some way or shifts, whether there's a move towards other forms of temporary or casualized work, whether we see big increases or small increases in the pay of these workers who remains to be seen, as does the orientation that universities take towards this. I expect there'll be a spectrum of some universities looking to cut some kind of deal to have a less rancorous process. We'll see some universities campaigning very hard to stop people from getting union recognition. And I think we'll see universities try to do some of each, to negotiate some terms with a union for a process that puts some restrictions on each side, and still within that process to try to get people to vote no. We would also see, should anybody succeed in getting a victory in an NLRB election, we should expect to see at least some of those universities go into federal court rather than actually bargain and try to get federal court to overturn an order from the NLRB that they negotiate. Now, all that said, it's not all economic. Well, we would also see graduate students negotiating over things like sexual harassment policy.
Right, benefits. There are many other things that go with part of being a union. And what you're saying essentially is that rather than this being the end of a victory, it's actually the beginning of a new struggle. At the very least, we'll start to see universities take graduate student labor a little bit more seriously. Josh, where's the best place for people to read your writings?
I write for Bloomberg Businessweek. You can find us at Bloomberg.com.
And we'll post a link to that website from our site later today. Thanks so much, Josh.
Thank you.
Josh Idelson covers politics, policy, and labor for Bloomberg Business Week, and his work has also appeared at outlets including The Washington Post, Reuters, and Slate. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.